This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This is the week for the Jimmies and the Joes.
Thought about taking a little person into the backfield and throwing them over the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, in short yardage situations. Now, there are several issues with this in that it's not legal at all.
This is a Draft Week edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by A&E Plumbing, Heating, and Air. Get $2,000 off a new energy efficient system now through May 31st. Call or visit aeheatingandcooling.com.
You can't just sit there and just say, all right, we're just going to throw him over the top. Is this like a read play where you're trying to figure out where he go, like where the weak spot is, and then you toss him over?
Yeah. Do you go over center? Do you go over guard or tackle?
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a read play.
Direct snap.
Are we talking a sweep?
Draft Week with Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
Good afternoon! Hey, happy Friday! Look at this, it's April 25th and it's a football Friday. Oh yeah, brother.
You get one.
Yeah, this is great. We got the NFL draft last night. A lot of sad shots of Shador.
Oh boy.
Boy. That was awkward.
That's a shame.
Maybe putting the Giants cleats in your little private booth that you had made up and legendary and everything else. I think he made the right choice. I think that one of the things we talked about with this was Prime keeping his name in the limelight, and I think that was purposeful. I think they did it to try to get as much pressure publicly on a couple of organizations to draft him in the first round because they knew what could happen.
I tell you what, the mental gymnastics that some of the movers and shakers in the industry are trying to make and stick landings on today. Oh boy, it is something else, because there's a lot of folks that were Shador's a top 10 pick, and it's just like, I don't think he is. And we've talked about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this a ton. He has got some fatal flaws.
Mm-hmm.
But quarterback class is so weak, and teams get desperate for quarterback.
Talk yourself into it.
That, you know, you sit there and you go, boy, he was a second-round pick heading into this year. Heading into this season, mm-hmm. he was a second-round pick. He's going to be a second-round pick. That's the way that it has gone, because we've gone over all of this.
He holds onto
the ball too long. He doesn't process intermediate and deep throws very well. He's really good in the short. He gets happy feet and does not trust his pocket, even when a pocket is there.
We're getting very sportsy here.
Dude, all of these things, people are like, nope, they just hate him because he's Deion's kid.
Yeah.
Really? The number one overall pick went to three colleges.
Mm-hmm.
They got over that because he's pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with being Deion's kid. It's, oh, maybe Deion stepped in it when he told all of the teams, don't waste your time trying to talk to Travis and Shador if you don't have a top seven pick. Maybe that had something to do with it.
May 1st, 2024. At Deion Sanders on Twitter. He will be a top five pick. Where your son going? LOL, I got time today. LOL. That was Deion Sanders replying to somebody talking about his son,
mm-hmm.
who went 4-8 the year before.
Yep.
There is now, on Twitter, readers added context, otherwise known as a community note.
Oh, boy.
Shador Sanders was not a top five draft pick.
Yikes. Will Takes Exposed get on that, too?
Oh, yeah. Literally the first reply, freezing cold takes.
Yikes. Yikes.
But I mean, dog, to get community notice.
Yeah.
That's tough, well, man.
And there is something here.
Oof.
I do. There is an element that I do feel bad for Shador in that we talked about this yesterday. It's the biggest day of his life.
I don't like this for the kid.
And I hate
it's not
that.
Fun.
I hate that. The reality of it is the orbit around him.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were saying is dad keeping him in the news the whole time. It inflated his ego. It inflated his
worth.
Profile. And look, the guy who's evaluated as a second round pick really throughout his whole career, that it's not bad to be a second round pick.
Here's
holy smokes. That means he's the third best draft eligible quarterback in this year's NFL draft class. I think that's pretty good.
Here's the thing for all of the people like, oh, they just don't like Prime's kid. This is the most cutthroat business out there. You don't think that some team is, if they thought that that was actually the case, that there was this public case against him because he's Prime's kid, that they wouldn't undercut the market and go, we'll take him, suckers.
Also, remember that there's this, remember the anonymous folks that were talking all week, and Tom Pelissero got roasted for releasing the anonymous notes, and everybody was like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Maybe it does. Maybe he did bomb his interviews, and maybe he didn't take teams seriously that he was meeting with because he didn't think he was going to be there when they were drafting, and it's affecting his now employment moving forward. Like, maybe all of these things are true, and look, he is a difficult nut to crack.
We don't matter at all. But in the one interview we had with him, he bombed that interview. It is today, in my career, it is the worst interview I've ever done with anybody.
Oh, don't know.
Yeah,
that's not even true. That wasn't even the worst interview of the day. Herm Edwards was.
Well, no,
Herm didn't want to be there. Carl Durrell was even worse. He wasn't even bottom two.
No.
Carl Durrell was the worst.
Carl Durrell was the worst. I should caveat that with the worst player we've ever had on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not hard to see him bombing an interview.
Yeah. And then there's, like, you know, people like B-Rod here on the fan text line. I get it. I do. But is Jackson Dart better than Sanders? Yeah.
I think he is.
I do. I do as well. There is.
And that's not like revisionist history. I said this leading up to this draft. If the Raiders could somehow swing Ashton Jeanty and Jackson Dart, it would be a home run.
Hell, I said it this week that the New York Giants, if they can trade back into the second or first round or get Jackson Dart in the second round, you can stash him for a year.
Mm-hmm.
That is perfect. But you know what wouldn't be? Having a quarterback room with Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Shador Sanders.
Look,
that would be an unmitigated disaster.
Here's how you know they think Jackson Dart is better. Shane and Daboll know that they will be fired.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they will be fired. So if you're going to go with, you're picking your guy. I don't care what anybody says. This is who I'm going to hitch my wagon to, because come game six, when we're 2-4 and they're screaming for Russ to get out, James to get in, and we're going, hey, if we don't do something right now, we're going to get fired. And they have to hand the keys to either Jackson Dart or Shador Sanders.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm going to give the keys to Jackson Dart. That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and look, I understand. I'm not sitting here to say that Jackson Dart is going to be an all-pro. I think fit and who you go to, it means a whole hell of a lot. System, fit with your receivers, your competitiveness as a team, how good your offensive line is, all of those things matter. But a lot of Jackson Dart and Shador Sanders, they have a lot of the same issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is consistency, and look, this is for a lot of young quarterbacks, but inconsistency or lack of consistency when pressure, you get a little bit of happy feet. But I will say one thing that Jackson Dart does do a lot better is the live to play another down.
Mm-hmm. The crippling mistakes.
Because Shador does not do that very well, and he takes a lot of sacks unnecessarily. And so, look, Shador has every opportunity to be a really good pro, and people that are killing him just because he wasn't a first round pick, dude, take a hike. But he's also made his bed with a lot of the things. Well, he and his family, because I mean, he was saying last night, like, nobody saw this coming. I don't know. FanDuel seemed to see it as
21 and a half was your line, brother.
Ended at 25 and a half.
Yeah. So
he kept on falling, man.
Yeah. Fan text line. What gets Danny more excited? Trolling Heat fans are thinking about Genty running in the silver and black. Oh, it's the silver and black.
Oh, yeah.
Look, the last 2 years, you remember how I came in last year after the Raiders took Bowers?
Yeah.
I feel exactly the same this year about Genty. I think they might have, they have the possibility to have one of the three best players at their position going in the NFL in next year at tight end and running back. That makes me happy. Makes me like genuinely happy.
Yeah.
Like there is a level of competency that has been restored to the organization for the first time in 20 plus years.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into a lot of this because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's coming in too. B-Rad's chiming back in. And we will talk about this. I have thoughts on this because, you know, there is this idea that the Giants traded a whole heck of a lot just to get Jackson Dart, who'd probably be available today. If you read the tea leaves on what happened in that first round, I'm not so sure that that's the case. But where we got to get to, let's start this draft. Look, the draft was great yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was not the high-end talent. There wasn't as many of the flurry of moves that people were thinking, but they were savvy, and some of them were very dumb.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Atlanta.
Mm.
But let's get to it. Let's break down this NFL draft. I'm done talking Shador for now. Can we do that?
Yeah.
All right.
We don't need to pile on. We all know what it is.
But a lot of teams did really well for, like, everything that we talked about leading up to this draft. I think it kind of played out. Mm-hmm. The good teams
did good.
Holy smokes, they're all getting better, baby. I'm excited for what is to come. But the fireworks started early with an unexpected move at number two. Danny Dusty on the Fan. NFL draft yesterday got underway from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Weird scene there. Weird scene.
A lot of sausage.
Oh, but it was an interesting collection of people because there was over 200,000 people in, I think 201,000 is what the number that I saw.
205.
Oh, 205.
They had to turn people away.
Because the population of Green Bay, Wisconsin is 105,000 people. So they almost doubled the size of Green Bay, Wisconsin with the draft. Boy.
Where are they all staying? There's no way they have enough rooms for that. No. You have to be staying in the outer cities. Or
little
towns.
KOAs. You got the campgrounds going on. I don't know.
I mean, it seemed like
well, there's
every
two
Packer
options.
Fan.
You got the KOAs and the DUIs. One of those two things probably happened.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson.
Yeah. Adrian Peterson was at the Vikings draft party.
Oops.
And he got a DUI on the way home at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness, man.
Well, draft party, I guess.
No.
That's the after party.
No, that's all. Goodness gracious.
Oops.
All right, but the draft, first pick, everybody knew it.
Also,
Cam Ward.
10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes, dog. Come on.
Well, I don't get why they always use all the time. Now, especially with the number one pick. The number one pick, it should be, yep, we know who we're drafting. Boom, done. Pick is in. We want Cam Ward. What are we waiting for?
Commercials.
TV window?
Yeah.
Well, it's either the TV window or, honestly, even if it is a slam dunk like that, maybe you hang on for those, 8 to 10 minutes just to see if somebody's dumb enough to throw, a ridiculous package at you.
No, that's not going to happen.
There are teams like the Browns and Cowboys.
Cam Ward went number one overall, and all of these deals are done so far in advance. You already know, right? The conversations are happening. It's not just like, oh, hey, by the way, they're on the clock now. We should give them a call. We should call them now. You know, that's as it gets a little bit later and the draft board starts sorting itself out. But fireworks came at number two with the Jaguars giving up a haul to get Travis Hunter. They get the number two pick and swap fourth round picks with the Cleveland Browns. And they also got a sixth round pick. But what Cleveland got, they moved down three spots, get a second round pick, swapping the fourth round picks, and then Jacksonville gave up their first round pick next season. That is quite a bit for a team that's a move that a team makes that is close. Jacksonville making that move to get Travis Hunter, you're not close.
Fart hammer.
So we talked about this with Seth Walder yesterday and the expected value and the idea of trading up versus trading back. In his grade, he gave the Jaguars a B-, the Browns a B. And he said that the expected value, because 2 and 5, while there is a gap that's still high there, the math on the expected value is only slightly in favor of the Browns here. I find that hard to believe, but...
Well, they get next year's first-round
pick. That's what I said.
Jacksonville ain't going to be that good this year. I can tell you that much. But they could be... Rust, let's go to our Jags insider, Jeff Rust. Okay. It's a bold move if you think, maybe you can just spin it as like, hey, we got a guy who plays two positions. So basically, that's like two first-round picks we used right there. Mm-hmm. Right there. Two for the price of one.
So we don't need next year's.
No, they scored this.
Get rid of it.
They scored this as slightly less value than what the Texans gave up to go get Will Anderson.
Yeah. All right. Well, but next year's first is alarming, mm-hmm. and that may change based on what next year's first round pick is. Because if it's 32, which I don't think anybody is anticipating the Jacksonville Jaguars winning the Super Bowl next year, if it's 32, then yeah, it's not that big of a hit.
If it's bottom 12,
ain't gonna happen.
It's fine,
but. I thought it was great for the Browns because the Browns also filled the need that they needed to fill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You needed help on the interior of the defensive line. We were talking about, all right, well, do you go Travis Hunter or do you go Abdul Carter?
Mm-hmm.
And is Abdul Carter a guy that maybe fits what you want to do a little bit better, because then you would have Myles Garrett and Abdul Carter? Well, when you move down to 5, now it's like, okay, really fix what you need to be what needs fixing, which is the interior of your defensive line. You get Mason Graham at 5, and you get some more capital. I think that's a win for Cleveland.
Yeah, no, I do too. And it was kind of funny as we started hearing that Mason Graham may fall down to like 7, 8, 9, and I'm like, how?
Mm.
I watched this dude play. How? Like he's an absolute monster, and the idea that he was going to fall past that point just didn't make any sense to me. Like, what was the last time we had somebody that was that big, that disruptive in both the pass and the run game in the interior defensive line?
Well, there's a few of them this year. I mean, but yeah.
But I mean, like, he was the dude this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the whole idea that he was going to fall never really sat in my head right. But yeah, no, like, weirdly enough, this is the Browns doing it right.
Liam Cohen, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, you may know him from
Duval
fame.
Oh God, don't remind me.
I've been saying this for over a year now. Travis Hunter is a better wide receiver than he is a corner. He tries to bait guys too much playing corner. He has got great ball skills and he recovers because of his athleticism. He is a better receiver right now than he is a corner.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how the Jags are planning to use him.
It's a little bit more than a we'll see, but we do have to be fluid throughout, right? We'll have a plan right now of, primarily on offense with learning the defensive system and practicing on the defensive side of the ball as well throughout this offseason program. And then as we continue to grow, we have to be fluid throughout this whole process. We've had multiple conversations at length with athletic training, equipment, sports science, coaching, equipment, everybody involved about this process and what it's going to look like moving forward. So we have a plan in place, and that's really where we'll start.
Offense.
Yeah.
More to learn. He's better at it.
70-30?
Yeah.
60-40.
I think it's going to be more.
80-20?
Yeah. Think about this. When you're thinking of playing in the NFL and playing both ways in the NFL, mm-hmm. In his division, now we know where he's going,
mm-hmm.
okay? If he is to play corner and wide receiver, twice a year he will play the Texans, mm-hmm. the Colts, and the Titans, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That means he would go from one side of the ball defending Nico Collins mm-hmm. to then having Derek Stingley Jr.
Mm-hmm.
defending him,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's just with the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Tennessee where he'll have to defend Calvin Ridley and then have Legarius Sneed defending him. Then you go to Indy and you will have Michael Pittman that you will have to guard and then Chevarius Ward be the number one corner defending you. That is far more taxing on you physically than anything you ever faced in college.
Yeah, despite the quarterback play being subpar outside of Stroud.
Just this year, they also will play Kansas City, where he'll have to defend Xavier Worthy and then be defended by Trent McDuffie. They play Denver, where you'll have to defend Cortland Sutton and then be defended by
Patrick Surtain.
They play the Bengals, Jamar Chase, and then Cam Taylor-Britt. They will play the Seahawks, where he'll have to defend and chase Jaxon Smith-Njigba all over the field and then have Reek Woolen in his grill.
Yeah.
That is where you go, the NFL is a different animal.
Yeah, you're not getting plays off.
You have no plays off. And you have got to be on your... You can't be baiting guys on the defensive side of the ball and hope your athleticism wins out. He is an elite athlete. Every single one of those guys that I just read off... Dude. Also elite athletes.
And that's the thing is like, yeah, I don't want to take away from Travis Hunter because his endurance as an endurance athlete.
Crazy.
Is truly one of a kind.
Yeah.
Like he is like his ability to play that many snaps, even at the college level, is insane. And because he was productive, incredibly productive on both sides of the ball. Like, you didn't see, like, this massive drop-off on either side of the ball. He was an electric wide receiver and a ball hawk game changer on defense. And for that to be even a possibility shows just how truly unique his athleticism and endurance is.
Pretty crazy.
But when you get to the NFL, everyone is a freak.
Yep.
There's no, like, when you're picking on guys, you're picking on the lesser freaks.
Yeah.
Like, even the lesser, like, the fringe guy, if you were on the fourth wide receiver or whatever, like, that dude was very likely an all-conference dude wherever he came from.
They're the best player on their team. Every player is the best player on their team.
So, it's going to be, it's definitely one of the things I'm interested to see just how effective he can be, not on one side, but both sides.
Yeah. Well, last night was dominated by quite a few things. But what does 5,134 mean as it pertains to this year's draft? That's the weight of an elephant, by the way. Here's Russ with SportsCenter. 5,134. That, my friend, is the combined weight of the 17 players that were drafted in the first round that are line of scrimmage players. Eight offensive linemen. Totaling 2,542 pounds.
A literal ton plus.
And then nine defensive line and edge players totaling 2,592 pounds. This was a draft of beef.
Yeah, a lot of big boys.
Lot of the big boys up front.
I mean, you look at a guy, again, we talked about Mason Graham. Mason Graham is a monster. That is a big human. Will Campbell, big dude.
Yeah.
Derek Harmon. Big dude. Josh Connerly, big dude. Membu, big dude.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just thick boys that got drafted.
It was impressive because the things that really popped out, you had 17 line of scrimmage players. Nuts. But then you had 26 of the 32 first round picks were from the SEC and Big Ten.
Yeah, the SEC tied their record with 15.
And then the Big Ten set a record with 11. And somebody went back and they did the math on that. Even if, like, you were to go back and go and try to find the highest number with their current iteration of schools. So, like, if you add Oregon, USC, Washington, UCLA to the Big Ten, Texas, Oklahoma to the SEC, and you went back as, like, 2020, they would have combined for 20. They got 26 this year.
Good God.
Yeah. So it tells you the consolidation of power, just how dominant and how good the Big Ten and the SEC are getting. They dominated this draft, and they're going to continue to dominate the draft. And you look at it, though, number one overall pick, Miami out of the ACC. number six pick was Ashton Jeanty out of the Mountain West.
Still there.
You had, I thought the Seahawks nailed their draft to going out and getting Gray Zabel. Perfect fit. You need interior offensive line help. Did you see what his family, what he said, and then what his family followed up with?
I saw that he's going to go smash some beers.
Well, yeah, he said after getting drafted on how he's going to celebrate being drafted by the Seahawks, probably go and start diving into these Busch Lights, would expect nothing less from a North Dakota State defense or offensive lineman.
Nope.
Okay. Peyton Zabel, relation, do not know. Peyton Zabel, though, same last name, quote tweeted that and said, already ran out of Busch Lights at the Zabel household, at Busch Beer, please help. I don't need to see any more.
Yeah.
They nailed that pick.
Mm-hmm.
They went and they got a great guard out of North Dakota State. He's played a lot of football for them. Perfect. Boom. Go and move forward. I thought that was a good pick.
You want to talk about North Dakota State and like what a school like that does? Did you see the pictures of him his freshman year?
No.
Like they had one up there of his freshman year, and he's just this big, lanky kid.
Yeah.
And that, like, that's what you do at a school like North Dakota State. Mm-hmm. You find that's very similar to like what Oregon State has done over the
what
years.
What they used to do very well with Mark Banker.
You find these kids defense. That have these massive frames that can move well, and you go, how much weight can we pack on him?
Yeah.
And that's like, if you look at the transformation between his freshman year versus when he just got drafted, the crazy thing about him is like, he can play tackle, guard, or center.
Mm-hmm. Well, not in the NFL. In North Dakota State, yes. He could play either guard or center. Versatile.
Yeah.
So I like that about him. Good pick.
What was the thing the Seahawks needed?
They needed an interior offensive line help.
Right.
In a big
way. Why not get a really good one that's very versatile?
One more thing on the offensive lineman. You asked me how I felt about the Patriots drafting Will Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. I was like, yeah, whatever. He's got short arms. Don't care. This is why it was the lineman draft. Right here. This is where every team should be built.
You are brought to New England to protect Drake May. What kind of tone are you going to set on this offensive line?
I'm going to fight and die to protect them with everything I've got.
Congratulations, Will.
That's awesome.
He was asked about going from Louisiana to New England. And it's a different type of seafood.
Yeah, and, it is. Yeah, just different type.
And he said, I can't remember the name of the seasoning, but he's like, I'm going to make sure I have my backpack with me with whatever seasoning in it. And he goes, and I'll adapt.
Old Bay?
That's Maryland.
That's Maryland,
bro.
Man. Right.
No, he's
it's a Cajun seasoning.
Sort of Creole seasoning.
Yeah.
You have that quote from Will Campbell. Then you have this one from Tyler Booker, who the Cowboys took at number 12.
Tyler I thought they were going to take.
Number 12 pick, another offensive guard from Alabama. This is on a podcast with Micah Parsons.
People wake up, be like, man, I can't wait to play this football game today. They listen to their hype music. They take all the pre-workout. They get so excited to play football until they come across Tyler Booker. And then when I'm going after you, quarter after quarter, play after play, series after series, and I start to see that love leave their eyes, like that's what makes me love the game. Like I just really love.
I like that. Yeah, you just got me hurt. Hey, yo, he ready to go.
Bro, I'm gonna play right now.
Yeah, he got me hyped. I ain't gonna lie.
All right.
Play after play, quarter after quarter.
Hey, man, welcome to the team.
See that light, the love leave their eyes.
This is why.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build inside out. We've been talking about the pendulum has been swinging back towards a more physical style of football. You got to be tough in the trenches. And 17 offensive defensive linemen in the first round, it tells you exactly how NFL teams are valuing this.
And I don't think it's just necessarily the class. Does it impact it? Yes. If there is more high leverage pass rushers, quarterbacks, would they have gone? Sure.
If you have a receiver class like you had last year?
Sure.
Yep.
But I very much believe in the copycat theory. The rest of the league is, and you're going to a couple teams that try to zig when everybody else is zagging and go, hey, you know, we want to be the space and 53 and a third and get you out and play fast and all that kind of stuff. But it's like the vast majority of the league, the pendulum is swinging back. to a much more traditional. Don't get me wrong, there's still going to be big time explosive plays, but I think you're seeing this in football and honestly in basketball too, where you saw things go so far one way with offense that teams are like, okay, we've had enough of this. We're going to start dictating back the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And teams are just getting bigger again across the board.
No, yes, they are. We were talking about the Pac-12 or the SEC and Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
First time ever the Pac-12 did not have a player drafted in the first round. It's an unfair assessment because there's only two teams.
Yeah.
And look, one of their former players went number one overall.
Yeah.
Cam Ward, you know, pretty good. But this is a stat that it blew my mind when I saw it. The Kirby Smart stat.
Mm.
Kirby Smart, in his NFL career, college football coaching career, he is 105-19 at Georgia.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good, right?
Mm.
He has 20 first-round picks to his name.
Good God.
He has more first-round draft picks than losses as the head coach at the University of Alabama. 19 losses, 20 first-round picks.
So he had two this year, right, with Jalen and Malachi?
Three.
Who am I forgetting? Booker.
Yeah. Well, no. Booker is a Alabama guy.
Yeah.
Mykel Williams.
Oh, right.
Went to San Francisco. Yeah. But that number is crazy to think about.
That is nuts.
Because it's also how long he's been there. You know, he's been there for what, 8 years now? Maybe even longer than that. He's been there for a long time. 105-19.
Yeah.
And he has 20 first round picks. And usually you'll see that with like a coach with, you know, maybe takes over a really good program that is humming. Like Dan Lanning, for example. He has got 6 losses, right? 3 losses year 1, 2 in year 2, 1 in year 3. He has 4. He has 4 first-round draft picks to his name because both Derek Harmon to the Pittsburgh Steelers and Josh Connerly to the Washington Commanders, he got 2 more this year. And then you add Bo Nix and then Christian Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
As his other first-round picks as the head coach at Oregon. And he did bring in both those first-round picks. He's brought in Christian Gonzalez as a one-and-done from Colorado, Bo Nix for 2 years, and then Harmon in the transfer portal, and Connerly was one of his first recruits. Yeah. So Lanning has 4. Like, his record is really damn good, but Kirby Smart has been doing it for a lot longer.
And cranking them out.
He's got 20 first-round picks. That's an insane number for him.
That's one of those ones you put on the recruiting profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have more first round picks than losses.
You don't even put that on the recruiting profile. You put that on the wall. Right outside of his office, which he'll hate, but people will notice when they walk in. People are definitely going to notice.
Put first round picks with like a little tally mark, losses.
Bingo.
And then just see how that stacks up.
Well, let's get to the two Oregon Ducks that were taken in the first round. Josh Connerly and Derek Harmon both go off the board on Thursday night, and the streak continues for the Ducks. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. The Ducks' streak of consecutive drafts with a first-round pick continued last night, as Josh Connerly went 29th overall to the Washington Commanders, and with the 21st pick, Derek Harmon went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That streak continues, which started back in 2020 with Justin Herbert going to the Chargers. Then 2021, Penei Sewell to the Lions. 2022, Kayvon Thibodeau to the Giants. 2023, Christian Gonzalez to the New England Patriots. And then last year, Bo Nix to the Denver Broncos. 6 straight years. That's a record for the Oregon Ducks to have at least one first-round pick, and they get 2 off the board, and that's the first time that they've had 2 off the board in quite some time. I think 2015, Marcus Mariota and Eric Armstead both going in the first round. So a decade in between getting 2 guys drafted in the first round. I think we kind of get numb to it because you see Alabama, Georgia, Texas. Clemson, Texas. They get multiple guys in the first round all the time.
It's not a common occurrence outside of those schools.
But for most schools, having a streak of first-round draft picks, pretty good sign and signal of the health of your football program. And to have Oregon, we've talked about this at length, the biggest change that Oregon has had over the last 8 years has been in the trenches. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that with the quality of players that have come through and the guys that are getting drafted, you know, start with Penei Sewell and Kayvon Thibodeau going off the board in this streak. Now you have one on each side of the ball with Harmon and Connerly.
Yeah, and that's been my biggest belief in what Lanning has built at Oregon. Like, don't get it twisted. I've been a hater for a long time. But the reason why I think the Ducks are actually heading down the path they're heading down, look, I mean, getting the skill position guys, like, that, the Ducks have shown they've been able to do that and obviously do more with less with when it started with Chip. You know, grabbing guys that fit his scheme more than anything else. Now Lanning has come in and carried off that momentum, and they're not just getting, like, the gadget guys. You're getting the best wide receiver in the class and DeCorian Moore to elevate the skill level position because you're getting the trench guys that are able to bolster that up. And like, it's a little bit chicken or the egg kind of situation, but the idea that you can get the skill guys without having the trench guys, like, look no further than the school that I go for in SC. They got the skill guys and didn't get the trenches, and then they struggled to get the skill guys again. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at when Lincoln got there, yeah, he brought over all the toys. You had Jordan Addison, you had Caleb Williams, you had, you know, all these guys, and you didn't really do much in the trenches. And then the second year, you got your ass kicked. And all of a sudden, a lot of those top-end skill guys left the program because the trenches weren't there. And if you look at Oregon, you're not seeing that. You're seeing more skill guys come in because the trench guys are what dictate everything on both sides of the ball.
Derek Harmon going to Pittsburgh is the perfect fit.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to go quarterback. I was surprised they didn't go quarterback there. They must feel really good about Aaron Rodgers coming to Pittsburgh.
Or something on day two.
Or potentially, they don't have a second round pick, which is going to be a problem if you're trying to get a quarterback. But, you know, is it a trade maybe with Atlanta? And one thing that has been very clear, apparently, is that Kirk Cousins doesn't want to go to a team that has a young quarterback, which, dude, come on. First of all, get over yourself.
Yeah, you're transitioning into that role, brother.
And the other, you're not good enough to dictate those terms anymore. And I don't think you ever have been.
Yeah.
But apparently Atlanta's asking price is very high.
Because they're going to have to eat a bunch of salary.
Well, guess what Atlanta's going to have to do? They're going to have to start building through the draft. And they gave up a future draft pick. Their first round pick next year goes out the door because they moved back into the first round in probably one of the dumbest trades I have seen. They needed edge rushers. They get Jalen Walker with the 15th pick. Then they traded up to 26th to get James Pierce out of Tennessee, which he has been tagged with a bunch of red flags.
Yes. Both for off-field and medical.
And on-the-field production, too, kind of taking series off, plays off, inconsistencies there. But now Atlanta, they need some draft capital to come back their way. And they're sitting on an aging quarterback. Maybe that is what can get them back into getting some draft capital is by trading Kirk Cousins. I don't know what Pittsburgh is going to do at quarterback, but I know one damn thing. Derek Harmon is a guy that fits that scheme, fits that style, is going to be able to learn from Cam Hayward, where you can't ask for a better guy for Derek Harmon to learn from because they are very similar in that. They are interior defensive linemen that create a pass rush, but are also very good against the run in the tricks of the trade. Dude, it's a seamless transition that they'll be able to go through there. And, I mean, it's just heartbreaking to hear what Derek Harmon's going through.
Gut-wrenching, man. I mean, you know, he does the interview after this draft and mentions that he's got to get out of there because he's got to go see his mother who's on life support. And just kind of reading about it, his mother has had unfortunately, she passed away shortly after Harmon was able to get to the hospital. But she had 8 brain surgeries growing up, and apparently she had a stroke that had just kind of debilitated her. But she was able to see her son get drafted, and It's heartbreaking, like he was able to get there and say, I did it before she passed. But man, what a, he called it bittersweet. Now it's,
yeah, I think that, yes, that's, I think of all of the emotions that you go through, this is the biggest day of your life, and it's going to be the biggest day of your life for multiple reasons. Yeah, you not just fulfilled your dreams of everything that you've been working for to get to the National Football League and be a first round pick, but it's also the passing of your mother, which trumps that.
Yeah.
And you lost your mom. I mean, it's an incredible emotional day for Derek Harmon, to be sure. I was, when you watched it, you saw the amount of tears in that room.
Yeah.
It wasn't just because he got drafted.
No.
The emotions are everywhere in the Harmon family, and our thoughts go out to Derek Harmon and his entire family, man.
I can't imagine that. Just, you know, if you want to, you know, chalk up the story, well, at least his mom got to see him get drafted, and it's like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking that away, because it is a big deal, and like that, you know, her last memory in the world is watching her son, reach his dreams. It's pretty damn good, yeah. But it's still, you know,
gut wrenching stuff. Gut wrenching stuff. 8 picks later, after Harmon, Josh Connerly goes to Washington, and this is going to be an interesting move for Josh Connerly as well. The Commanders. Their offensive line is interesting. Remember, they traded for Laremy Tunsil this mm-hmm. past offseason. So if you look at where Washington is at from a depth standpoint, you have Laremy Tunsil at the left tackle, Andrew Wiley at right tackle, Nick Alverghetti at left guard, and then Sam Cosmi at right guard. They went and they just said, all right, we can never have too many offensive linemen. Connerly is projected as a guy that can play both inside and outside, mm-hmm. though he hasn't played inside. He is, we're talking about a supreme athlete, though, was a basketball player, former running back in high school, mm-hmm. that they said, hey, you're getting too big,
mm-hmm.
and put his hand on the ground and turned into the best offensive lineman in high school football. In the country.
Yeah.
And he has been an outside offensive lineman. They think he can do both. And that's going to be an interesting move for him. One thing that's always stuck out to me about Connerly is that he's always been a sponge. And the coaches have said he's a sponge for knowledge, just wants to learn everything, not just what he is doing, but what everybody else is doing on the offensive line. It appears that that's going to be the plan for Washington, to kind of say, all right, where can you thrive?
They're
going to
slow
system?
Play him. They said all the reports right now is that the Commanders don't have to rush him. So if they want to have him be the guy that is the utility piece as he learns the NFL game and picks up the tricks of the trade there, if you know either Tunsil or Wiley get dinged up, he can be the first tackle off kind of a deal. Or does he kind of learn the interior game and become your starting left guard? But the way they're saying it is basically you can never have too much, and it's. You're not wrong.
You cannot.
It being better there, and then somewhere down the line, that or hell, let's say he goes into training camp and he's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got depth on your offensive line, but you also now you have a tradable piece, not him, whoever he replaces.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's not a bad thing to have.
And when it's a 100% injury sport, it's good to have that depth there. Great to have that depth there.
And the Commanders just seem like they're doing stuff right.
Yeah, like functional organization.
They just seem to be functional. It's like, is Connerly the best or most pressing need? No.
No.
But if you're looking at it and you go, we were really good. We were in an NFC title game, and the team that we lost to, where they're really good at? In the trenches. Mm-hmm. You know where we should probably get better at so we can keep our franchise quarterback upright? In the trenches.
In the trenches.
It's not rocket science.
Instagram Reels broke the NFL draft, and why did the Giants move up to 25? Read the tea leaves. The writing was on the wall. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.